She's like, you know what you need to do? You need to write a book. I immediately was like, I hate books. I don't. And it's actually the first line in my, in You Do You-ish, my first book, because most nonfiction books I freaking hate because they're boring. They're snoozy. I mean, some of my favorite thought leaders in this space, I'm sorry, their book sucks because it's work. And then what happened for me, the thing that really unlocked, like, oh yeah, you dumbass, you can do it your own way, was...
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by the Going North Advancement Compass, available now on Amazon.com. It is an interactive journal for you to track your personal growth, track your goals, track your wins, and help you advance north to your next level of success. So pick it up today and get growing. Now let's get on with today's episode. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special awesome human for you today, courtesy of Freakage Troop. I guess accessspeakers.biz, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
All right, good. All right, sweet, because I didn't write the name down. I'm glad I remember. But hey, we got one heck of a guest for you today, my friends. That's right, Dean. We got an award-winning, best-selling bookcaster, y'all, because not only she joined the business of immortality, known as authorship, she is also a podcast host as well, the co-host of a fabulous show indeed. So she knows the game and knows how to play. A shout out to the wonderful Triple H, all the Triple H's indeed, because today's wonderful guest, y'all, she's a TEDx speaker, business coach, authenticity aficionado, and the founder and CEO of Be Authentic Inc. So let's give it up for the E to the H herself, the one, the only, Erin Hatzikostas. How you doing today, Erin?
Whoop, whoop. I am doing great. You have brought a vibe that I have not had on any podcast anywhere else. So I love it. I'm super excited to jam to your vibe.
Well, there we go. I'm excited for this too. It's like, shoot, I didn't have to bring out the corn yet. This is great. That's right, Dave. She thinks it's going to be a podcast maybe, but it's really a corn maze.
Virtual corn maze in May sounds great.
There you go. Justin Timberlake was right. It's gonna be May. As in you in the maze. Let me stop. I'm just messing with you. Ain't about corn mazes. It's about the energetic air. And so, my goodness, if you were to describe your journey to the wonderful lady that you are today in three words, what would they be and why?
Never doing normal. So I realized something about myself. I call it a PP, my personal pattern. And I actually, of course, didn't realize it until I slowed the frick down and started being in this world of speaking and authorship where you have to like actually reflect and diagnose. And the first time I remember it, although my dad tells many stories before this, of this personal pattern of never doing normal, was when I was in middle school. I ran track, middle school and high school. I was a basketball player too, but I ran track in the spring and I ran the hurdles. And you can't see how tall I am, but I don't even make 5'3". So running the hurdles was not an obvious choice for me. Running over metal towers of terror as a small human. And people would ask me from time to time, why do you run them? And I don't think I had a good answer. And as I reflect back, I was like, oh, wait, I know why I ran the hurdles. It's the same PP. It's the same personal pattern I've had with anything. And the reason I ran the hurdles is because less people ran the hurdles. It wasn't normal, right? And so competing with the people running the 100-meter dash or the mile, like I wasn't the fastest runner. I wasn't, you know, the best runner, but I was good at finding places where things were less normal and going there. And so for my whole life, and this is, you know, we'll get into it. I'm sure my second book is the that's coming out in October is called The 50% Rule. I sort of realized that too often we try to compete in the same league as everybody else. And it's exhausting. It's uninspiring. And the only way to win if you compete in the same space is to work harder, do better, right? And instead, if you do things a little less normal or 50%, like the book talks about, 50% is normal and 50% is new and is your curated version. Now you essentially have, you're constantly competing in a league of your own. There isn't the comparison cramps. There isn't the same sort of metric, right? It isn't about being the best. It isn't about working the hardest because now you're just a little bit different. And so you're in a league of your own. So when I say never doing normal, you know, and over the years, my allergy to normal has grown and grown, I think because I've become inherently addicted to how much more fun and how much more success I can have if I don't quite do it normal.
There we go. That's right indeed. Well, we ain't got no slots today. That's right indeed. Somebody's got a dictionary and a lexicon. Indeed, that's what I'm talking about. Freaking comparison cramps. Ain't heard that term before. That's what I'm doing. It's like, all right, cool. So that person over there is doing some big things. Oh, darn, Charlie Horse. Oh,
exactly.
That's what I'm talking about. So you got a new book coming out in October. All right. This is interesting indeed. All right. Cool, cool, cool. Oh, man. Well, I sure haven't. Didn't even know about that one. All right, cool. So I guess we might be getting some insider scoopies. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. And it's called the 50% Rule?
The 50% Rule. Yeah. And the subtitles, throw out half the playbook to start competing in a league of your own.
Oh, wow. Okay. All righty. All righty. So that's right, folks. So you have a giant playbook full of plays. Just cut it half of it. There you go. And throw the rest of it away. That's right. And then don't even use it, because if the other team steals it, they'll be like, hey, we thought we stole their playbook. Why are they doing the things that aren't in here? What the heck happened? That's freaking interesting indeed. And I guess that just comes from all of your years just helping folks to really get to their next level, and you just being authentic yourself by just really just being honest and being a great storyteller.
It sort of did. So yeah, I mean, so I've been preaching and talking about this concept of authenticity as a strategy, as a secret weapon for success for 5 years now. And I don't get tired of it. I absolutely love, I reframe really how people think about authenticity. And that it's actionable, and especially in the workplace when the inauthentic river is flowing so freaking fast, like it's work to be authentic. And so you need to do practical things. What happened? And, you know, so we can talk about You Do You-ish and most importantly, like happy to give any inside scoops into how that was written, because I know you have a lot of authors that listen. But the 50% rule, what happened ironically, Dom, was while I was sort of this badass out there preaching authenticity, becoming an expert in it, I subsequently was learning how to become an entrepreneur, right? I had been in the corporate workspace for 22 years. It was a lot of shit to learn, right? And there's no shortage of information and courses and people to give you the playbook, right? Of how to grow a social following, how to do an online course, how to write an email, you name it. Like there's, and what happened is while I was sort of doing this authenticity thing, but then I was studying like how to grow my business, I was feeling overwhelmed and stagnated. It all kind of came to a head. I was at a session in Nashville. I was part of this group called Brand Builders Group for 3 years, who taught you. I mean, they trust me, they have the playbooks, right? And I remember sitting there with literally a playbook or a PowerPoint, you know, that was like 80 deep on all the things you need to do. I can't remember what topic it was. We were talking, maybe keynote speaking or something. Actually, it was how to launch your book. this is really relevant to people, right? It was like, here's the playbook for book marketing, right? And it's a 72-point checklist of all the shit you can do to sell your book, right? Everything from simple things like your email signature to, you know, $20,000 rent a tour bus like Rory did and put your book on the side of it and, you know, and hope you get a return. And I, all of a sudden, I just felt like I felt paralyzed. I was like, I'm a hard worker, but this is just too much and it feels exhausting. And so in that moment, there was this, I had used the 50% rule in a different context before. And I remember just thinking to myself, wait a minute, Aaron, what if you just 50% rule it? And what I mean by that is not half-assing it, right? Like just throwing it out, you know, like that wasn't just like, okay, take the 72-point checklist and do 36 of them. It was, what if I throw out like the half that feels icky or inauthentic or maybe just too hard, but I bring in my own ideas and I curate sort of a new playbook that's half theirs, but I have some new fresh ideas. My brain, I'm very sort of crazy and innovative. Like, what if I understand the intent of what they're trying to do, but I do something different that isn't on their checklist? And what happened, even though essentially the pie became the same size, right? In theory, I became so much more excited and motivated because I wasn't just, you know, following the 72-point checklist. So what happened was that helped me, right? And I kept kind of referring to it. And I'd listen to a podcast. I'm like, oh, remember to 50% rule it, right? Because there's like so much information, just like we're doing here. And then people, whether it was coaching clients of mine or just friends or colleagues, you know, they would have some issue. And I just found myself constantly going, well, why don't you 50% rule it? And they would like lean in and be like, huh? And then I would explain what it was. And they're like, oh my gosh. And I could just see like, it just kept unlocking all these people, but still not enough to write a book about because like there's only so much. And then what happened was I just kept seeing it everywhere. And so what had started as this sort of self-help mantra rule to get me unstuck, right, and sort of propel me, I started to see it more than that. I started to see it in Hamilton, in Weird Al Yankovic, in John Madden. I started to see Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Like I started everything I seemed to watch, every documentary book I read, I would see more and more of these stories where I was like, oh my God, they 50% ruled it. And that's how they had success. So for example, Weird Al Yankovic is not really a very good singer, right? But he took a dorky accordion and took pop music and parodied it. And so time and time again, I was seeing all these people, like I say, they kind of went from underdog to unmatched. They went to a league of their own by marrying the two. Hamilton, you know, was the goat, right? Hamilton married something very traditional and used some of the traditional stuff of Broadway plays, the sets and the music, but married it with hip hop and with actors that look nothing like the people they were portraying. Then I was like, oh my gosh, I have to write a book about it. And so that's sort of, and it really is, it's like an authenticity hack. So what I teach in the corporate workplace is really important because you need more than a hack, because like I said, there the inauthenticity river is flowing like you just had, you know, 12 inches of rain, right? And so you need to have the principles I talk about. You have to have sort of the corporate examples. But what I love about the 50% rule is you can either layer that onto it, or especially in the entrepreneurship world where you're doing things where there's rule books, you're writing books, you're doing speaking, you're whatever. If you start to do the 50% rule, you no longer feel stymied and feel like you're just competing with everybody else, but instead, you know, you're doing it your own way, but you have a sort of this formula, not formula to do it.
Try to do it indeed, do it indeed. So it sounds like you're taking half of the pie and then eating it all in one bite, full force, like, yay, authentically hungry no more, as opposed to just cutting it in half and then taking a small little slice and be like, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm quote unquote dieting here.
Nobody wants a diet.
Exactly. Especially when you think about the first three letters in the word.
I've never heard that. I heard that. I love it.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. That's right, indeed. Feel like I got a first round draft pick in the NFL with this guest today, indeed. That freaking inauthenticity river, it's freaking huge. So freaking right. It's like, sure, because you're so right. Like, there's so many playbooks out there, and there's so many tactics to like deploy out there, and you can get overwhelmed easily. And some of them don't even work the same anymore as they did pre-pandemic. So it's like, oh god, shoot, what the heck is actually going to work here? And then it sounds like you're adding something new to the magical toolbox for folks out there indeed to devour. It's freaking awesome.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it isn't just a tool to get over your own hurdles. The like you just said, some of these things don't even work anymore. I mean, people on the other end, readers, listeners, customers, humans need unexpected. When you are great, but you're expected, you're just another sort of great person. But if you can be great, plus also be unexpected. I mean, people are, that's why we only can watch videos that are like less than 30 seconds, right? Because we need the constant sort of change and surprise element. And yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the rule is you're actually doing it because that's going to serve people better. They're going to pay attention. They're going to wake up from their slumber. They're going to notice it. If, you know, if you're doing the traditional book playbook to market it, and you have, I have my four bonuses and I have my 99 cent on can, it's like, that was great when nobody had done it. But after people see 632 books marketed that way, that, you know, they sleepwalk right through everything you're saying. So if nothing else, I love the saying by Sally Hogshead, which is, different is better than better. Such a simple, like, I just love that quote, different is better than better. And that's, you know, that's a big part of what the 50% rule helps you do.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, indeed. That's what I'm talking about, indeed. So my goodness, well, what helped you get the confidence to become an author with all this wonderful experience? Did you just wake up one day after being a CEO, was like, all right, I got all this knowledge here. It's time to make my own book of Proverbs here.
Definitely not. Definitely. I remember one of the executives I worked with when I left on my own, and I don't know what the frick I was going to be doing, but I started talking about authenticity and blogging. She's like, you know what you need to do? You need to write a book. And I was like, yeah. But, and then I immediately was like, I hate books. And it's actually the first line in You Do You-ish, my first book, because I don't hate all books, but most nonfiction books I freaking hate because they're boring. They're snoozy. I mean, some of my favorite thought leaders in this space, I'm sorry, their book sucks because it's work. It feels like work. It feels like you're reading it because you want to be not righteous. You want to, you know, if you want to be a better leader, it's like, I got to be noble and I'm going to trudge through this book and learn all the things and put them into place. Or if I've been blocked by something, I'm going to read this book that helps me, whatever, make more money while I'm sleeping or whatever. And it's work because they're boring. They're prescriptive. Maybe they tell some stories. And then what happened for me, the thing that really unlocked, like, oh yeah, you dumbass, you can do it your own way, was Jen Sincero's You Are a Badass book, which is a, you know, New York Times bestselling for a bazillion years. She's got three in the line of the You Are Badass. And when I read that, even though I don't think I was really the target, there's a lot of like self-help. I hate to say it. There's a lot of self-help that you almost starts from, you have to be broken to be kind of, and then be unbroken. And I think there's a lot of people like me that are like, I'm not broken, but I'm really definitely not freaking perfect. Right. I have, you know, and so, you know, hers starts a little bit like, you know, family issues and did, I'm like, I was lucky. I'm privileged. I didn't have those things, but even despite not being maybe the target market, I devoured the book. Like, I actually read to the last page and, like, let's be honest, we don't, make it to the last page of a lot of nonfiction books. And the reason I did is because it was snarky. It was funny. It was, and I could tell she wrote like she talked. And that was the breakthrough for me, which probably a million people have said this before, but I don't know. I made it up in my own head. When I finally was like, oh, wait, writing is like talking on paper. Because I was a math major. I freaking wanted to shoot myself when I had to do a 5-page paper in undergrad. I'm not a writer, but I'm a talker. And so I think Jen's book really gave me permission to say, well, first of all, just freaking write like you talk. And I hear that all the time. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing I always hear. I can hear you, Erin, if they know me, or I can hear, she feels like she's talking to me. And part of that is really just being unencumbered and not getting in your head and have to feel like you have to follow the playbook and be normal and get it right. It was like, no, I just want to write a book. First of all, like I'd want to read. I'd want it to be using my snarky, sassy language. It definitely has some barnyard language. Telling, you know, one of the things I'm good at is stories and metaphors. It's got the most, a million, you know, obscure metaphors to tell a point, or, you know, stories that I've unearthed that are interesting. And so yeah, I think for me, and actually it's funny. So then, you know, I said I was part of Brand Builders Group and I had a coach, and I remember talking to her like January, February of 2020. And I'm like, Elizabeth, I think I've got to write my book. Because also, I mean, the thing I believe in strongly is you don't write a book unless there's like a gremlin trying to crawl out of you. Like you can, but it's pretty damn hard to write a great book. You should feel like there is, you know, if you're from the 80s when the gremlins, right? Everybody knows the gremlins. They like come out of the stomach. Like somebody should be trying to, that those thoughts should be trying to bust out of your body. And that's what I was feeling, because I had put some things together. I started to realize that authenticity actually was a strategy. It wasn't just be yourself. Like I had enough stuff where I was like, oh my God, I have to tell people. And I remember telling Elizabeth, and she said to me, oh, Erin, I think that's great, but you got too much on your plate right now. Sort of, and she was trying to serve me. She was sort of like, you know, because I was building the website. I was doing, you know, I was still early in my journey, and rightfully so. I mean, sometimes it's better to wait till you've, you know, met with a lot of people and speak, you know, it's not always good to do the book out of the gate, because you learn so much when you do speaking engagements or consulting or whatever, coaching. And I remember being so grateful that she said that, because I understood where it came from, but I knew that it was coming out of me. And then I got lucky. We had this thing called a pandemic come through like a month or two later, and, you know, hockey practices and games and basketball game all dried up. And so I was like, you know what I'm going to do when I got nothing else to do? I'm going to write this book. So, I mean, the first one was a mess to begin with. It ended up turning out pretty well, but no way, shape, or form did I ever consider myself a traditional author. I just knew I was somebody that had something that just had to get out. And then most importantly, gave myself permission to talk on, you know, talk on paper.
Heck yeah, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's the gift of being alive in this era. It's like it's got so many tools to make things magically appear. It's like, sure, talk a book to existence for real. You can actually freaking do that. It's like, oh yeah, that's right, indeed. Folks prefer it, indeed. I'm also glad you did your book in audio form too. Then you're reading the book. That's always a pleasant bonus when the author reads their own work.
Yeah, I actually, when I was trying to decide, because I didn't come out for, you know, I did it a year after the book published. And I remember, actually, my podcast co-host and very good friend, probably the person that knows me the most, you know, she was like, I think you should get an actor, which is, this goes to the 50% rule. This is why I always, every time you take advice, like, don't take advice 100%, right? Like, take it in. So I had, you know, I had that. I kind of felt like I should read it, because I knew the authenticity thing, but I'm not a good actor, right? And so reading a book is a little more like acting. It's very different than keynote speaking, right? Or just, you know, sort of consulting and talking sort of off the cuff. There is a different skill set. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go out to my social media friends and ask them. And one of those was a private Facebook group that we have for the podcast. And let me just tell you, Dom, they let me have it. They're like, if you don't read this thing yourself, right? That is so hypocritical. We need to hear your voice. It's about authenticity. Nobody knows it better. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I read it and I will read my next one as well, because despite not being the best actor, the reality is I've figured out how to do it a little bit more, and you get yourself right in there and you know your work and you say it with passion. And yeah, I think it turned out pretty well. So that was that journey.
Yeah, you're damn right it turned pretty well. 123 reviews. Folks are lucky to get 23. Shoot. I'm glad you listened to your fans.
137. We have 137 right now, or I have 137 on it now.
See, there you go. 12 just magically appeared out of nowhere. See, bad math appeared too. Oh, my.
None of them are bots, I promise. That would be hypocritical too.
It's funny you have to say that now too sometimes, because it's like, got so many folks out to look
at. Yeah, none of them are non-humans.
That's right indeed. A random cell phone tower in Bangladesh somewhere, someone pressing buttons, be like, we're gonna make $1,800, we're gonna become millionaires here. That's right indeed. Fake influence, you love to see it, not really. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Aaron's got you what you need to feel like sweet tea or lemonade, y'all. That 50% rule, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Go for the sweet tea side. That's right indeed. Metaphorically speaking, indeed. So my goodness, my goodness. So since you got all this magical experience under your belt, what would you consider your biggest setback that actually became your biggest setup for success?
Oh gosh, Dom. What a great question. My biggest setback that became my biggest success. This is sort of lame, but I mean, I've had a lot of setbacks, but I would actually, in the sort of modern day, in the 5 years of doing business on my own, I have to say it was COVID, because, and here's why, I am a self-professed instant gratification whore, IGW. I write about it. I want shit fast. I, you know, decorate my house. I love to go buy pillows, because you come home and you just like throw them on the couch or the bed and you're like, done, right? Like, I like this. Get it from my father. He is the same way. Like, we are just instant gratification whores. And so when I started my business, I ran at the same speed I did everything else. I was like, zoom, right? Like, I was off and running. And I actually had my first keynote was sort of this accidental keynote in 2019 that I didn't even know I knew they had asked me to speak. I didn't ask them for any money. I thought I was just some side speaker. And then there was like a press release about me being the keynote speaker. And I was like, oh crap. So like, I was off and running. I was like, oh, okay. Cause it was only 20 minutes. And I was like, oh, and then the guy that had recommended me, he's like, I hear you're keynoting. And I'm like, nah, I'm just doing like a little talk. And it was for 600 people, like my first one, right? It's classic. Like I can work my tooties off and I still can't get the 600 person audience that's in my backyard. It was in Hartford. Perfect, perfect like talk. It just like randomly landed in my lap. But my point is, I was off running really fast. And what happened with COVID is it made me slow my freaking roll. And we all need to figure out how to manufacture mini COVIDs, right? Because I think I actually had a conversation with a friend last week and she's like, I just want it again for a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, maybe for like a week or two, but it was like, then they're like, oh no, it's not really a pandemic. And she's like, no, I want like a year. And I'm like, ooh, that's not good. So how do we manufacture that slowdown, that pause, that how do we start saying no to things, clearing calendars, have time and space to think? But for me, a lot of really great epiphanies came from that time. And part of that was because I wrote the book. And I say this all the time. I think the biggest misunderstanding with a book is you think you know than write, but it's more like you write than know. So much unfolds when your brain is forced to type slower, to think, you know. And so even with, you know, with the 50% rule, I had an outline. I had carried my phone around for a year documenting stories and ideas, and that was like a mile long. But the truth is, there's so much that unfolded in that book that I was like, oh shit, I did not know this is where this was gonna go. Like, this is amazing. And so, you know, that happened with my first book. So much of the way that I think and talk about authenticity, that I think the things that most have people pause, like one of the things, you know, I sort of define authenticity. I the first thing I do is like, look, it is not synonymous with be yourself or transparency. The Greek root of the word is authentikos, and it means to be genuine, but it also means to be original and authoritative. And so there is this nuance. And so the way I talk about authenticity is that authenticity is exposing who you are when people least expect it, in the service of others. And that in the service of others, and the concept that authenticity isn't about you and just making you feel better about what you're doing or at work, but it is actually, if you think about it first, like use your authenticity to create connection and trust and permission for the other person. And also a little bit of intrigue, right? Where people are leaning in and a little curious. It changes everything. So things like that, I don't know that I would have had, you know, those reflections without, you know, COVID, which I, you know, I said at the beginning, I never do normal. So it pains me to like have COVID be my setback, because that's so freaking normal. But the truth is, it, you know, it really did help propel me in the end.
I mean, a year of a quasi something that doesn't kill people where the roads are back to being like ghost towns, I'm all for it.
Just taking out the killing of millions of people and we're all in.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, it's like we have a thing, like, hey, ghost town roads, like COVID traffic was amazing. I'm just
right.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. That's right, folks. When it comes to that authenticity, that's right, exposing yourself when folks least expect it. That's right. So she's giving you permission to moon people, y'all. That's right. I was messing with you. She's not doing that. She's not doing that.
In the service of others is the third component. So the moon's kind of out, unless you got a really nice rump.
See, there you go. So in the service of others. So just saying. Twerking is in on social media these days, so there you go. Ultra bad example. So my goodness, so since you've been on a boatload of interviews, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're on the guest side of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question that I really think everybody should be constantly asking is, what are the tangible things that I can do to stand out from everybody else? What are the tangible authenticity hacks? What are those things that are going to allow me to not outplay somebody, but out unique them? And, you know, I would cobble together a couple of things. I mean, first, what I do when I talk about authenticity, I talk about the 6 principles of strategic authenticity, and the acronym for that is HUMANS. And they stand for humility, being unexpected, modeling, adapting, narrating, and sparking. And, you know, we don't have time to go through all of those. You know, the two that are, I think, most powerful and tangible are, one, use humility. Use humility purposely. Tell stories, weave them into your website, your introduction of yourself, your marketing materials. Humility, and I call it humility moment. So humility isn't just, I'm really crappy at XYZ. Humility moment is like, when I was going to do something, I completely pooped the bed, but then I learned this, and then that's why I'm a better whatever. So the best use of humility is sort of to tell that story, but then say, well, why I'm telling you, and why, how does this help you understand who I am and what it's like to work with me or whatever. So it takes like a conscious effort to collect those stories and then to have the guts and courage to use them. So that's one, is using humility, not being humble, using humility as a fast pass to connection and trust and building a little bit of intrigue as well. And then narrating, which is really storytelling. I mean, as an author, you know, like you have to tell stories, right? But it's sort of like, I tell people, we put in a pool a couple of years ago and I'm like, if you ever put in a pool and you have to figure out how many trees to cut down, figure out how many trees to cut down and then triple it, which is like really stupid, but you know, you get sick of like the leaves and I know it's such terrible first world problems to have, but you know, I think storytelling is like that too. If you're, you know, like, oh, I'm writing a book or I'm like, I got to tell stories, like think about how many stories you have to tell and then triple it. Because almost everything tastes better if it's got a story. And in fact, almost all of my chapters start with a story just because I'm not good at starting with just words. Cause I'm like, I don't know what to say with words. But if I tell a story, that gets me in the flow, and then the words of what I'm trying to coach and preach and stuff come after that. And so storytelling, whether that's in writing, it's in the workplace. If you're a salesperson and you're doing, you know, 52 page PowerPoints, freaking scrap them, scrap 90% of them and instead tell stories. And that's a big hallmark of people that are authentic and that are authentic leaders as well, is, you know, those are a couple of the principles of the humans that you can do. And then at the end of the day, when all else fails, 50% rule, freaking everything. And I talk about it in the book, you know, I'm very kind of snarky, tough love. And like, look, I love the rule. So if people even don't even get the book, they just learn the rule. Or let's say they get the book and they read a couple chapters. Great. Wonderful. I mean, that's wonderful. But I will tell you, even when I was writing that stupid freaking book, there were multiple things that I was like, struggling with, and like my health, I had an issue with my back and I forgot to 50% rule it. And then I finally realized it. And I'm like, you dumbass, like stop ping ponging between PT and chiro, 50% rule it, curate your own. And so what I will say is that rule is so deep and thick and can be used for just about freaking everything. So I just really encourage people to just get curious and practice with it. And then of course, you know, hopefully check out the book in October when it comes out as well.
There you go. It'll come out and show some. That's right. Indeed. Some good stuff indeed. Help you advance y'all. That's right. Indeed. That's right. Indeed. That's right. It's like, as soon as you open the first page, then you'll be narrating yourself, reading the book. It's like, you're wondering how I got here. It's like, I listened to Aaron on a podcast. And out of nowhere. One question for you. So your fabulous book, You Do You-ish, Unleash Your Authentic Superpowers to Get the Career You Deserve. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
It would be a big, fat, indulgent trifle. Like one of those where you just throw a bunch of shit in, right? The cake and the cookies and the whipped cream and the pudding and the... I feel like it's a pool of trifle. One of the things that's most important to me, whether it's my book or my speaking, is I always want people to go on a roller coaster. I always want them to feel like they're running into different things. And so while it's snarky and funny, I use a lot of humor, it also, like, just when you're laughing and then you'll be like, oh damn, she's got right, like, where'd she go? Where'd fun Aaron go? She just smacked me upside the head and went really deep on coaching, research, philosophy. So it's a roller coaster. And I also, one of the things I 50% ruled in the book, you know, my book coach at the time, she was really, her specialty was memoirs. And I knew it wasn't technically a memoir, right? It really is a prescriptive nonfiction because we put these freaking things in boxes. But I also knew that there was an arc to my story that I wanted to tell. And I wanted to do it more than just sprinkle it into chapters here and there. I mean, I certainly do that as well. And then I was like, well, why don't I just call them memoir moments? And so throughout the book, and they look different physically. It's like a ripped off page with like gray background instead of white. And they don't have a title or anything. You don't know their memoir moments. That's just what I call them. And they're scattered throughout. I think there's 7 or 8 of them. But after you read those, and neither one, you know, none of them are more than, you know, sort of a page and a half, 2 pages, they're really short. What you realize is I'm actually telling the arc of a story. And I start at the end. Like, my first memoir moment is about me. I tell a story about how the first day that my successor, I was CEO of about 1,000-person company, and my successor was hired. And he came to one of our offices, the home office where I was at, and I walked him, you know, I did the proverbial walk him around and introduce him to the new people that he would be leading, my team that I was, because I was retiring. And so one is, it sets a little mystery, like why is she leaving her CEO job, right? But then I tell this story about how we walked around for about 45 minutes and we had like 2 cubicles left. And all of a sudden I look down and I see this white blob in my hair. And I was like, out loud, oh shit, that's yogurt from breakfast 5 hours ago, right? Like, I literally been walking around introducing him. And my hair, I'm sure I was like typing at the keyboard, but I, you know, dipped it in my vanilla yogurt and then been proudly wearing it for the rest of the day, including the 45-minute walk around. So, and then I go on to tell little bits of stories that sort of show my evolution and how authenticity started to really become an awakening for me. So my point is, it's got a little bit of everything. It's a party, it's fun, it's serious, it's different, it's not, you know, it's not normal.
There you go. That's right. She's an authenticity freak, y'all. That's right, D. She's not normal. That's right, D.
I love it. I just watched last night Giannis Antetokounmpo's documentary. He has the movie, but he also has a documentary on Prime. Might have been on Prime. And my husband's Greek. You know, we're huge sports fans. You know, love the man. But it's funny because they were talking about when his nickname, right, is the Greek freak. If people don't know, he's a 7 foot tall, formerly from Nigeria. His family, he was born in Greece, and then he was drafted in the NBA lottery to the Milwaukee Bucks, and he won MVP 2 years in a row. I mean, so, and he's got a crazy name. So one game, there was a kid that had a poster that literally said Greek Freak. So it started with this like 12-year-old kid holding a poster. And what they talked about at first, his agent was telling, like, at first we were like, Freak isn't always seen as like a pot, you know, they were sort of trying to analyze whether they should, because somebody had seen it. And then they were like, this is amazing, actually, right? People can't say his name, it rhymes, it's great. So it's just funny, we listened to that last night. So I'll take the authenticity freak. I am a descendant of Giannis and his name, and I'll be the authenticity freak now. Thank you, Dom.
Yeah, my pleasure, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right. She's got the 24-inch authenticity pythons. That's right, indeed. If you're not careful, she'll drop the leg drop from the heavens, or the elbow drop from the heavens on your fakeness. That's right, indeed. Your inauthenticity river's about to have a drought when Aaron shows up. Dig it.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, man. That's right. And she goes from a highly educated university. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. We got extra weed at that highly educated university.
one might surmise.
That's right, indeed. The highest grade in the dispensary. That's right.
Oh, my goodness. So much fun.
Oh, man. Well, we're coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you were 25 again, but you're still in the current year with all of your knowledge and experience, what advice would you give to yourself?
Start sharing your thoughts publicly as soon as possible. I think we so often nobody sits us down, right, in our careers. whether that's we're an entrepreneur the whole time or most of us start in some sort of, you know, traditional corporate job. Nobody there should be like a bar mitzvah for when you pass from the, oh, you just got to work hard and get shit done, to you actually have a lot of knowledge to share and bring. And nobody sits us down and says, like, here's your rite of passage, right? That you now are more valuable for your thoughts, but you have to take the time to find them. You have to find the time to share them. You have to be bold in how you get them out there. You have to look for opportunities nobody's going to hand you. You know, you might be running a quality assurance program, but that doesn't mean you can't go speak on stages or write on LinkedIn. So, I mean, this place that I'm in now where I can inspire people and I can share knowledge, and at 25, yeah, I mean, I still had some things, right? Like we all do. I mean, Christ almighty, half the learnings probably came from when I waited tables for 5 years, right? Like I think about, even though it was early in my career, like there were so many lessons that I probably didn't know I had. So I think that would be it. I would encourage myself. And of course I would encourage others, like, don't wait to be a thought leader. Don't wait for a title. Don't wait for an opportunity. Don't wait for a permission slip. Nobody's doing your bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah to tell you that you're now, you know, sort of passing into that thought leadership. Start doing it today.
Heck yeah. That's right indeed. It's called thought leadership for a reason. You think it, and now you're it. That's right indeed. That's right. Now you just got to make sure you prove it and let other folks know about it. That's right indeed. That's right, so they can know your boat. That's right indeed. And folks need to know all about Aaron's metaphorical boat, because the whole freaking arc of freaking authenticity content goodness. So for those who need to hop on and cop some copies of your magical books and keep up with your journey, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Well, I mean, one, if you're a podcast listener, which you must be, when you're done soaking in all the Going Norths, head over to Because Work Doesn't Have to Suck. And it's just the letter B space, cause we'll get you there, Because Work Doesn't Have to Suck. And then if you want to interact a little bit more real time, LinkedIn, I'm a dork, so that's where I hang out. I mean, I've got an Instagram and whatever, but I'm usually lurking on LinkedIn quite a bit. And so I share things, you know, daily stories, inspiration, and interact with others there. So I'd say those are the best two places to start, and then go from there. And then obviously if you're writing a book, I mean, I have a lot of people that quite frankly buy my book and read it just because they're looking for that input and that inspiration to not do shit normal. So You Do You-ish might be a great example and give you a permission slip, but only take about half of it, right? And then curate your other half. So hopefully that can inspire some authors, and then others too. The message of authenticity as a strategic advantage is also very relevant. I'm sure to many people listening, it should be relevant to everybody.
That's right indeed. That's right indeed. We heard that right, folks. Gonna put a link to all of Aaron's wares in the show notes, so be sure to subscribe to her magical podcast, cop some copies of her magical books, and keep up with the journey. Follow on the LinkedIn and stay LinkedIn indeed. That's right indeed. If you want a leather and not a pleather jacket, metaphorically speaking, that's right indeed. That's right indeed. You're one of those folks who can actually invite themselves back, and you get an automatic yes indeed. One of those gold star.
Oh, thank you.
Yes indeed. Because hey, folks only got probably 2% of what Aaron knows. So any parting words before we close up shop?
Yeah, I would say just spend your days focusing on what's needed, not what's normal. Figure out what's needed, not what's normal. Go forth. 50% rule everything.
If you're listening to this, that means you're one cool individual. If you want to be cooler than two cucumbers, share this episode with someone that you think will enjoy it too. And be sure to subscribe and keep being fabulous.